This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, it's been a shocking week for Europe and in particular for Britain. On Thursday, 27 migrants died in the English Channel. They were trying to cross from France to Dover in a small and entirely unsuitable dinghy. It has really shaken most people who've seen it in Britain, in France, and of course across Europe. It is a reflection, no doubt, of the failure of the British government in particular, but also the failure of Europe and the UK to reach workable and reasonable arrangements post-Brexit. We're joined now by Chris Johns from London. Chris, former chief economist with the Bank of Ireland, now a successful commentator. Chris, this has been a terrible week, and Boris Johnson and his government have had many terrible weeks. But this tragedy starkly underlines the unfitness for government of the British Home Secretary, Priti Patel, whose approach to immigration was condemned in April as vague, unworkable, cruel, and potentially unlawful. These people have no other way of applying for refuge and citizenship in Britain other than to cross the channel in these dinghies, which are unsuitable, and of course, there's no other option but to deal with the people smugglers who are organising these crossings. It's been a very bad week.
It has, and it keeps getting worse. The Home Secretary, Priti Patel, was due to meet with her French counterpart at a meeting in France this weekend. And as a result of Boris Johnson's actions in tweeting a letter to Macron yesterday, they've withdrawn the invitation. So it just keeps getting worse. It's important, I think, to put all of this in some kind of context. How big is the problem? Where does the problem arise? And how long has it been going on for? The people trying to get into the UK goes back centuries. And this, the most recent history goes back at least 30 years. People have been trying to get into the UK from Calais in this way or in similar ways for at least the last 30 years. And with each crisis around the world, 30 years ago or a few decades ago, it was in Bosnia and places like that. There were lots of refugees coming in from that part of the world. And as different crises erupt in different parts of the world, people end up trying to get into the UK. One of the interesting things about the data is that if you look at asylum applications in the UK over the last couple of years, compared to, say, at the beginning of the 21st century, only 20-odd years ago, they were 2 to 3 times higher back then. So in some ways, this is a manufactured crisis, at least in terms of the numbers, in terms of the Daily Mail and Daily Express headlines.
Yes.
It's not as big a problem as it was back then. It's been steadily and in a small way growing. But the reason why the focus on the boats has come in recent years is actually because a good few years ago, they successfully dealt with one big aspect of the problem, which was that people were getting into the UK via stowing away on lorries, cars, and trains. And the cooperation, actually, between the British and the French put a stop to that almost completely, a combination of putting up proper fences and the adoption of technology to actually be able to search all the vehicles, stopped that, so that the boat thing, which is now in the headlines, has steadily become the only way that these people can cross the channel. And there's lots of misinformation out there as to why they get to France and then still want to get to the UK. If you read the UK tabloids, it's all because they're benefits seekers. They have essentially going after the benefit system that is so generous in the UK. That's factually incorrect. They get more money as asylum seekers in France than they do in the UK. So the truth, as always, is more nuanced, subtler, and more complicated than the popular media would have us believe. The fact that they speak a bit of English, but they don't speak French, often matters to them. They often have family members already in the UK that have already got here, so there are family reunion considerations. A big driver is that France has identity cards and Britain doesn't, so that in a way people can come to the UK and frankly disappear without having to produce an identity card every time they want to get a low-paid job, for instance. So it's complicated. But these are desperate people, and they are being treated dreadfully by the system. And but there is fault on both sides, but it is mostly, this week in particular, it's all Boris Johnson's fault.
Yes, I don't want to keep harking back to your comment about this government in Britain and the Tory cabinet in particular as right-wing hacks, after-dinner speakers and journalists. Priti Patel has been Home Secretary for 2.5 years. She had two previous ministries, one of them from which she had to be sacked for breaking the ministerial code. She's broken the ministerial code on a couple of occasions. But she has been in charge of immigration, and I'm quoting from July 2020, which is about 15 or 16 months ago now, and she had introduced a system, and she said, and I quote, "It will enable us to attract the brightest and the best, a firmer and fairer system that will take back control of our borders, crack down on foreign criminals, and unleash our country's true potential. We are building a brighter future for Britain and signalling to the world that we are open for business." This is classic Johnsonian rhetoric, empty, meaningless, and in the context of this week's tragedy and the continuing drama we see on the French coast, rather disgusting.
Most of the time, the rhetoric is designed to simply get headlines in the Daily Mail and the Daily Express, and to appeal to the 34-35% of people who vote Tory. There are lots of fears within the Johnsonian cabinet about the way that majority is to be held together, the successful coalition that he has built. The latest thing that I heard David Blunkett, who's an ex-Labour Home Secretary from years ago, say, the real problem is still Nigel Farage.
Yes.
And that if Nigel Farage comes back into politics in the way that he is threatening to do and plays this immigration card, the Johnson circus believes that Farage could be the next British Prime Minister by playing the immigration card. This is the nuttiness to which we have descended. Instead of explaining...
I have to say, Chris, sorry to interrupt you. Well, just to say that David Cameron dismissed Farage when he was a Tory Prime Minister, and Farage won a whole clutch of European Parliament seats, and indeed it was Nigel Farage and his campaigning for a referendum on Britain's membership of the EU that really brought Cameron down and his government. Well, it brought Cameron down, but not the Tories.
Yes, because of all sorts of different things, but Farage was definitely a big part of this story. And if you let Farage seize control of the narrative,
yes,
and if you play to everything that he hopes that you will play to, and in particular, allow this narrative that immigration is an out of control problem, and that all these evil, wicked people are coming to British shores to take over whatever it is that they're going to do, instead of patiently explaining that immigration is actually falling a lot in the UK.
Yes.
It's not the problem. In terms of asylum seekers and refugees, UK doesn't have anything like the scale of the numbers that France and Germany and other EU countries have. It is a problem that has been with us for many years. It is a problem that cannot be solved. It can only be managed, and we can manage it well or we can manage it badly. The way we manage it badly is to demonize these people and to always, always seek to pick a fight with the French, because picking a fight with the frogs is good copy for the tabloids. But when it has real horrible consequences, it spins out of control in the way that it does this week. And that's exactly what has happened, particularly with this letter that Boris Johnson wrote to Macron only yesterday. The first thing he did, of course, was tweet it.
Yes.
That you couldn't design something to irritate the French more than simply tweeting what is supposed to be a private letter.
Yes.
And this speaks to their lack of understanding about how to do diplomacy, how to do international negotiations. And of course, they've burnt a lot of bridges here, which is that they have not just been demonizing asylum seekers, they have been demonizing the EU. They have been Yes. demonizing the French. They have been, in particular, demonizing Macron. Now they need their help, because there are so many ironies in all of this. Of course, when they left the EU, they left the arrangement that was EU-wide, that you can, under certain circumstances, send refugees back to the country that they came from, if that other country, if you are both EU members. So Britain did send asylum seekers that had failed asylum applications back to France when they were members of the EU, when they were both members of the EU. Now they can't do that.
No, that was governed by what's known as the Dublin Convention, which it dictated that a refugee had to stay in the first European country or be sent back there, indeed, had to stay in the first European country they arrived at. That no longer covers the British.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I want to take a broader look at this week, though, and the signs, which are very clear now, that the Tory party itself can't deal with this guy anymore. He gave a speech to the CBI in the north of England, which spectacularly imploded. He clearly hadn't done any preparation, and he started talking about Peppa Pig. And it's done him enormous harm among his own party and indeed with the Tory press. He's in trouble now, isn't he? And another straw in that wind, The Spectator, which is a magazine he edited, and it's the house magazine of the Tory party, they just nominated Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, as Politician of the Year. Sunak, of course, being leading candidate to replace Johnson if he's taken out by his own team.
Yeah, there are two schools of thought on this one. The one is that this is the beginning of the end. It might be a long ending, but this is the beginning of the end of Johnson. And I, for one, would love to believe that. I have my doubts, however, because I think more insightful other opinion is that for as long as the Tory party thinks that Johnson can win them a general election, they will keep him, and it doesn't matter what he does. And I think the evidence is so far with that opinion, because if you think of all of the things that he's done, all of the messes, all of the disasters, all of this stuff that we're talking about just this week and in previous weeks, because you and I have been talking about a very long list of awful aspects of Johnson's behavior. But nevertheless, you know, they're in midterm. They should be, if history is any guide, they should be going through some midterm blues in the electoral cycle now. And they're basically level pegging with the opposition, and which is really quite a healthy position for Johnson to be in, A, given that it's midterm and that cycle of political popularity that I talked about there, but also that list of things that he's done, if the worst that means, that implies for his electoral coalition, is that he's level pegging with Labour, a couple of tax-cutting budgets ahead of the next election should see him through again. He has this remarkable ability to lead Tory backbenchers in particular and the wider Tory party in general, believing that no matter what he does, he's a winner. And this is his remarkable political skill, wherever it comes from. This belief that he is an electoral winner will see him through this is one school of thought that I think is probably just about the dominant thought. But it is clear that one or two politicians are on manoeuvres just in case that school of thought is wrong, just in case this is the beginning of the end of Johnson. Because don't forget that the moment the Tory party changes its mind about Johnson, changes its mind that he is, in fact, no longer the winner that he was, they'll dump him in a heartbeat. I mean, that's what the Tory party always does with its leaders. Look at the way that they got rid of Margaret Thatcher, who was a much more popular figure within the Tory party than Johnson has ever been. There is only one thing and one thing alone that keeps Johnson in power, this belief that he will win. If that crumbles, then people like Sunak and the others who are currently very gently on manoeuvres just in case Johnson is crumbling. I think that at the moment, the two people who are most clearly on manoeuvres are Sunak and Michael Gove. But there are others as well. Jeremy Hunt would be in that frame as well.
Right. Now, the meeting in London today, actually, between Sefcovic and Lord Frost is very important for us. Given what he's done in other policy areas and indeed to the British economy and to inflation and to the cost of living potentially, and of course the way he has damaged the immigration system, what he might do for this country is really troubling, and the relationship between Dublin and London hasn't been as bad for a long time. Although when he was asked about this last week, he said it was great. There's no easy and quick fix for the dispute between Europe and the UK in relation to the Northern Ireland Protocol.
No, because there are clear parallels between the arguments over the Northern Ireland Protocol and what's going on over the refugee asylum crisis in between France and the UK, in that the way in which Frost and co and Priti Patel and co approach this problem have very great similarities, in that what they do is that they play to the tabloid gallery. What they are trying to do is stoke culture wars and produce the headlines in the tabloids that they want and damn the consequences for real life, this weird parallel universe that they operate in. And there are so many dimensions to this. I mean, this is not relevant to the Northern Ireland Protocol or the French asylum crisis. But to give you an idea about the quality and the kind of thinking that goes on the Tory backbenches, I just wanted to draw your attention to something that a Tory MP, Nick Fletcher, said, I think it was only yesterday, and he said, and I'm quoting here, that Doctor Who being played by a woman has pushed young men into crime. Now, this is the quality.
We could spend some time talking about it. We wouldn't have any listeners.
This is the quality of the people that are making these kinds of policy pronouncements, who are backing Priti Patel, who are backing Johnson. If you'd watched Priti Patel reading her statement about the refugee crisis out in the Commons, you'd understand just how lacking in qualities these people often are, reading word for word something that had been written by somebody else for her, unable to lift her eyes to the Commons to be able to say something meaningful to her peers in government and on the opposition benches about a real and deep and profound crisis. And Frost is the same. He's just one of these belligerent, bruising, not terribly thoughtful, not frankly, not terribly bright people who have a brief to generate cheap headlines and damn the consequences. And when you have these tragic consequences in the channel, you run the risk of equally tragic consequences in Northern Ireland. And as I say, when you have this lack of quality of people, lack of deep thinking, lack of seriousness, actually, and this, I suppose, that's what that Doctor Who comment was. I raise it. It's a lack of seriousness as much as just being idiotic in terms of your opinions. They don't treat these issues with the seriousness that they deserve. And the consequences therefore flow in the way that they do.
And of course, the Labour Party is still weak when you look overall at it in its post-Jeremy Corbyn mode. But the key to one of Johnson's endeavours, which is Brexit really, was the slogan, take back control. They don't have control now of anything. And he doesn't even have control of his speech, because he lost his place and offended the CBI. Now, the CBI, the Confederation of British Industry, is a core constituency for the Tory party. And the question of how long he can go on offending those people and the people they work for, and at the same time raising the cost of living for the red wall seats, for example, that's where he got his vote last time. So they are kind of stumbling towards something.
This is where it could get interesting with respect to the beginning of the end of Johnson, because they clearly have this focus on the red wall. Something that's due out any day now is a white paper. This will be written by Gove and his acolytes. That's his responsibility these days. Leveling up, the white paper Leveling Up is due, where they're going to tell us exactly what they're going to do to, essentially, the political project is to cement the vote in the red wall seats. Leveling Up is about equalizing the south and the north of England. It doesn't really matter for Scotland and Wales. Those are two separate regions. And this white paper that is due to be written by Gove and co. Will tell us exactly what they plan to do to try and keep their red wall seats, what money they're going to spend, what actions they're going to take to achieve their levelling up project. As an economist, I will tell you that it's not possible to do, certainly in the timescale that they want to do it before the next general election. I'd argue that it's almost impossible to do full stop, because it's what every government in the world is always trying to do with respect to its less deprived regions. It is a near impossible task. So that is all about this focus that they have on their red wall seats. And the thing that seems to be bubbling up just a little bit is the idea that this focus on the northern red wall seats has left the south somewhat neglected. And there are a number of aspects to this. First of all, it's the contempt which the Tory party continuously holds London. And that is because London continuously elects an awful lot of Labour MPs. But there, you know, there are a lot of voters in London, 8-9 million of them, and the rest of the South, and even the prosperous Midlands. If the idea begins to grow that the way in which they are going to do the levelling up is by levelling down the South, and there are strands to their thinking that suggest that's exactly what they're going to do, then Johnson's electoral coalition begins to crumble, not because he can't retain the red wall, but because he starts to lose the blue South.
Yes.
And that's when it could get very, very interesting. And there are some by-elections coming up that might provide some straws in the wind. And one must never overinterpret by-elections because they can always throw up quirky results. But if there is some sense from the by-elections that are due over the next few weeks that Johnson is losing, particularly the blue wall, or that coalition is starting to crumble, then I think you will see people like Sunak, Michael Gove, Jeremy Hunt really start to come out from the sidelines and more actively than they are start to think about being the Conservative Party's next leader. Unfortunately, from a whole host of perspectives, I think that one fourth name that will also try to become the Tory Party's next leader will be Priti Patel.
I don't think that project will work when someone digs a little bit into her record. And remarkably, she is the daughter of migrants who came from Idi Amin's Uganda a long time ago, but it was one occasion when Britain did have to open its doors and did open its doors for persecuted Asian people. Leaving that aside, Chris, we come back to our own situation here, having to deal with the EU with what might reasonably be described now as a rogue prime minister. I mean, there is something distinctly Donald Trump about him in many ways. In other words, he laughs off embarrassments. He appears to have a popular following. And he, if he can get away with the stuff this week and the Owen Paterson corruption stuff of a fortnight ago, he might think he can get away with anything.
Yes. And we've both described these people in various terms, and I won't use that time-honored phrase that we've used many, many times. But one of the characteristics of these people, particularly Johnson, is unassailable self-belief. And the one thing that he does believe is that he can sniff the political wind better than anybody else in Britain, and that therefore that allows him to do pretty much whatever he wants to do because his judgment cannot be second-guessed because he's always right. And many ways in which you can see that is that he and his very small number of acolytes around him in number 10 sincerely believe that they are right about all of this and that the EU is wrong, whether it's about the Northern Ireland Protocol or whether it's about the refugee crisis, is that right is on Johnson's side. I think it's a function of perhaps going to Eton. I don't know. There certainly is no self-doubt. Yeah. And the thing that he will always say, of course, is that all of the evidence is that not just my belief is what it is, but the evidence backs it up. Everything I've ever done has been consequence-free for me. I have gone from being a motoring journalist. And we saw that in that speech to the CBI. I don't know if you saw the bit where he was making motor car noises, recollecting his time as a motor car journalist. So he's gone from being a motor car journalist through to a Telegraph columnist, through to a Brussels correspondent, Mayor of London, MP, Foreign Secretary, Prime Minister. What's not to like about that career progression? And I've won the Brexit referendum and I've won a general election. Everything I touch turns to gold.
And we command an 80-seat majority in the House of Commons. Just a final thought, Chris, about the British popular press, not just the tabloids, the Telegraph, the Times, the Guardian, of course, are guilt-free in this respect. But I detect a hardening of attitudes towards him over the last 2 weeks in particular amongst the British press, the Telegraph, even his former employer, which you would think would do almost anything for him. They have a piece today by the editor of The Spectator, Fraser Nelson, wondering if Brexit was a good thing. If the Telegraph goes down that road, who knows what's possible?
I would be astonished if hardline Brexiteers start expressing serious buyer's remorse. I think that they're too ideologically dug into that particular foxhole. And my sense is that they will maybe at most ask the question, was it worth it? But I doubt very much if this side of 10 years, we're going to get any kind of confession that, you know, we did wrong. Sorry. They're too dug in for that. Brexit is the thing that, by contrast, I think that Johnson thinks he's going to win the next election on. As I've said before, I do think that his belief is that if I can keep the Brexit wars going, that coalition will remain united behind me. The fact that the press is starting to turn on him a little bit is that I think just a sense of frustration that there's just the list of things that is going wrong is too long. And that this idea, what they're trying to achieve is again, it's more midterm electoral stuff. And we've seen this so many times before, not just in the UK, but in many other countries, that political commentators and analysts in places like The Telegraph telling the Prime Minister, telling Number 10 to get a grip, get some serious people in as your advisors rather than the idiots that you've got. This is typical sort of stuff at this point in the electoral cycle. And I think that's what they're trying to achieve is a sense that this is a government that has some competence, because they're just being unnerved by the fact that they are so obviously across so many dimensions of policy incompetent, and they're not serious. So they're just urging a little bit of seriousness. I don't think that there is any kind of anti-Johnson coalition in the press in any serious way starting to grow. That will only start, as I say, if the opinion polls seriously go against him, which they are most definitely not at the moment.
Okay, Chris, we're very grateful to you for joining us from London. That was Chris Johns, and we're grateful to Chris. To all of you for listening, that's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.